This is Benthic, the Atari 8-bit podcast.
This is Kevin Savitz, and this is an interview edition of Antic, the Atari 8-bit podcast. Charles Ratcliffe is the son of Matthew Ratcliffe, the prolific writer for the Atari magazines. Matthew Ratcliffe, or Matt Rat, died in 1999. Matthew wrote for Antic, Start, Compute, Analog Computing, and ST-Log. In 1986, he won Antic Magazine's award for Outstanding Contributor. Here's what they wrote about him back then. In 1985, Missouri programmer Matthew Ratcliffe was really on a roll, publishing four major Antic programs on a remarkable variety of subjects. In March, he delivered the powerful printing utility Custom Print. Followed in August was Atari Toons, an ambitious animation program that we featured in a popular contest. In September was the innovative Revision C converter that debugged a long-standing problem for many users of Atari Basic Revision B. Then, in December, BBS Crash Buster was a valuable safeguard for bulletin board sysops needing protection against destructive system crashers. End quote. Charles dug around in his dad's filing cabinets and found a lot of interesting Atari-related material that he let me to scan. Look at the show notes at ataripodcast.com for that link. In it, you'll find Matthew's record book listing expenses and income related to his writing, which is a fascinating look at the financials of an early technology writer. Writing contracts for Analog Computing, Antic Magazine, and ST-Log Magazine, and a version of Matthew's resume. This is a different sort of conversation in which I interviewed Charles about his dad, then he sort of interviews me about his dad, and then we end with some technical troubleshooting on his Atari, which I've left in the recording because why not? This conversation was conducted December 12, 2014. You are Charles Ratcliffe, son of Matthew Ratcliffe?
That's correct.
Okay. Where are you based?
I'm in Marthasville, Missouri. Corntown, USA, pretty much. It's about an hour west of St. Louis.
And what do you do out there?
Chase my kids around, pretty much.
But awesome.
No, I'm in the service tech industry. I fix broken coffee machines and espresso machines, that kind of thing.
Huh. Awesome. All right. So your dad, Matthew Ratcliffe, was I know him, and I think a lot of Atari people know him because he was a prolific writer in the computer magazines, especially the Atari ones. He just wrote dozens of articles in Antic, and then also I discovered today also Analog and a couple for Compute and other ones. And so I understand that Matthew died when you were 12 or so. Is that right?
12 or 13. It was 99. See, I think I was 13.
Yeah. May I ask what happened?
Yeah, he had cancer. He had a couple bouts with cancer. Went through chemo, radiation, and all that. He wound up getting a bone marrow transplant from his brother, my Uncle Perry. And even though it was a perfect match, his body eventually rejected the donor. And that's what happened.
Well, I'm sorry. All right. Well, I guess my open-ended question is, I've seen you around on the Atari Age forums and on Facebook, and it seems like you seem to have some sort of interest or connection in this Atari stuff, even though it was maybe before your time. And so I was curious to know about that, about your interest in it.
Well, I've just recently gotten into the retro gaming scene, and just early this year I started collecting all the old systems, the Nintendos and Segas and all that stuff. And I just, as I got older, I kind of just got a general interest to see what my dad had done, and I go poking around. I think a few years ago I typed in Matthew Ratcliffe or Matt Rat in Google, and I came up with that thread on Atari Age, and I don't know if you know which one I'm talking about, but it's like a 4 or 5 year old thread, and I posted something on there, and the thread was pretty much dead. And then there's tons of responses from people saying they either they've talked to him or they knew him or they were familiar with his work. And so I'm coming to learn more about him than what I already knew. So I didn't realize until recently how big he was in the Atari scene. Or I just remember being a kid in high school and having a bunch of these old Atari t-shirts that I could finally fit into, and I didn't know where they came from. And I think I had a Dig Dug t-shirt, and it looked about as old as I am, and I had an old Waterworld t-shirt. I don't know if that's an Atari game or not, but yeah. So I start finding all this stuff, and I start talking to people, and so when I came across this Talking Tottle type program that somebody mentioned in that thread on Atari Age, and that's how I got into contact with you, because it was in one of your archives, in the Antic archives, Antic magazine archives, and then I tried to access that program and I couldn't. That's when I sent you that email, and then I got a hold of you on Facebook, and I actually got that program to kind of work through that emulator that you recommended to me. So that was kind of neat to see that again after all these years. I'm not sure, if I actually remember it or if that's just my mind filling in the blanks, that's that pretty much.
I was looking at the programs that and the articles your father had written for Antic, and I noticed another one called which I don't know if you've seen, called Yak Spell, and it's some sort of spelling program, but it has Matthew's voice in it.
Really?
Yeah, and I haven't tried to make it work yet, but it has all these sound files, so I guess it has digitized voice. I'm sure it's terrible quality.
No, I read that on that Talking Tottle type thing, he used the Kovox speech box. Is that what he would have used for this Yak program you're talking about?
Yes, it's he definitely used Kovox Voice Master for the Yak spelling.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So do you have any of Dad's Atari stuff around, or is it long gone?
It was long gone, and then it found its way back to me, which is actually kind of a bizarre, crazy story.
Tell me the story.
I've got a friend that owns a retro video game store in St. Charles. It's called Game Trader 2. It's ran by Charlie Shaw, and I got to know him through the St. Louis retro gamers scene, and early last year, beginning of this year. And he's only had the store open since the summer, and he sent me a message, and I've talked to him before about my dad, a little bit. I knew he was in the Atari scene, and he turned his personal collection into the inventory of his store. So he had a bunch of, Atari stuff, and he's a little bit older than I am, so he can remember typing programs from Antic Magazine into Atari to get it to work to play the game. So he, I think he may have been familiar with my dad's name, but I've told him before, and his name's Matthew Ratcliffe. So he sends me a message one day and said, "Hey, what was your dad's name? Is it Matthew Ratcliffe? Because I've got some stuff here." So it turned out he got this lot of Atari 800 stuff off Craigslist about 4 years ago. And I think it was November 28th. He just decided to open it up. I guess he was going to put it in his store as inventory. And so he sent me that message, and he sent me pictures. And it's got the Atari Basic Programmer's Guide with my dad's name written on it. And so I don't know when my dad got rid of the stuff. I don't know if my mom got rid of it after he passed away. I don't know, but so yeah, that was really cool that I found that. I mean, I've got the 800XL, a bunch of old kids games. I've got Sesame Street, and obviously these would have been for a 2 and a 4 year old to be playing games on. And I've got the 1050 disk drive. I've got a Rana Systems 1000. It came with everything except for a power supply, and someone from the Atari Age forums was nice enough to mail me a power supply, and lo and behold, the thing still works. I couldn't get it to read anything from the disk drive. I'm sure I'm probably just not doing it right. The last time I used this thing, I was probably, you know, 3 or 4 years old, just punching into BASIC. I vaguely remember punching, you know, characters into a blue screen and thinking that was the coolest thing. I'm like, Dad, I'm programming, and you know. So it still works. So I was kind of amazed by that.
Awesome.
That it found its way back to me. So of all the game systems I had when I was growing up, this is the only one that's still original. Everything I have, I've rebought off Craigslist, eBay, or whatever. So this has become my favorite piece of my collection, and kind of got the Atari fever now. So
excellent. Well, good. That's amazing that the machine found its way back to you. I mean, it was just must have just been kicking around that general area for years.
Yeah. Well, the guy I got it from, he said he got it off, like I said, he got it off Craigslist 4 years ago, and the guy he got it from says he got it from a church rummage sale, and we used to live in Ferguson, a block away from, at the time it was St. John and James Catholic Church, and we left Ferguson, I think it was like 91, 92, so I don't know if maybe he just donated it to that church before we moved out of there, or if he donated to our church in Villa Ridge, who knows? But I'm glad I've got a hold of it now.
Awesome. Well, from what I've read, he started out with an Atari 400.
Okay.
So there's still at least another of your dad's machines out there somewhere. So, if you have any discs that of software that he created, I can easily move that data to a modern computer, so you could use it in an emulator.
Okay.
If you know.
I don't think I do. I mean, there's some handwritten stuff, but it didn't sound like any, you know, kind of interesting programs. I mean, I don't have much knowledge in the area, so I don't know exactly what I'm reading half the time. But in his basic programming guide, I did find a handwritten program. It's just written on graph paper. It's called Joystick Move Smiley Face or something like that. So it's kind of hard to read. It's written in pencil, so it's a little bit faded. And
yeah.
So I don't know, maybe I could scan it and send it to you and see if you can make anything out of it.
Sure, I'd love to see it. Sounds fun.
But the cartridges work on the thing. I did get those to work, and I tried plugging it into I didn't have a phono to connection adapter, so I wound up just chopping up a coax cable and soldered it together, but plugged it into a TV to get it working that way. It was just black and white. I'm not sure why or what I'd run, but so I was trying to guess Ernie's Magic Shapes and Colors, so the color matching game wouldn't really work in that case.
It's all gray.
Yeah, I'm looking at the programs here. I've got Big Bird's Special Delivery, Dr. Seuss's Fix Up the Mix-Up Puzzler, Ernie's Magic Shapes, Kids on Keys, and Time.
Yeah, those are like little kid games.
Yeah.
You said you have kids.
Yeah.
Are they old enough or too old for it?
I've got two girls. They're 2 and 4.
Oh, that's the perfect age for some of those.
No, I'm way. They just had birthdays. They're 4 and 6. So yeah, they're perfect age for these programs here.
Yeah. Are you going to introduce them to Atari, a third generation of Atari users?
Well, I was playing. I've got a 2600. One of my buddies from the Retro Gamers, St. Louis Retro Gamers Club, gave me a 2600 Junior, and I just now got that working with the I was trying to use a RF switch, and that wasn't working. Then I got this jerry-rigged phono F connection cable, And so it worked fine on this TV. I tried to get my daughter to play Asterix. She looks at me, that's a grown-up game. I don't want to play that. So they like playing the newer games. I can get them to play my Nintendo 64 sometimes, and they enjoy that. But so yeah, I'd like to. I've programmed a couple games in like QBasic, mm-hmm. nothing fancy, but I mean I've from what I've heard, it's similar to Atari Basic. Is that true? Or
I believe that's true. I have not used it myself.
Yeah. So my oldest daughter's in kindergarten now. She's starting to get her sight words and you know vocabulary, things like that. So it'd be neat to you know write a little program to help her with her quarterly vocabulary words and sight words and things like that, or even get the you know the talking title type program to up and run for them to learn.
Awesome. Grandpa made this program for you.
Yeah.
Nice.
Instead of, you know, old pocket watches being handed down as family heirlooms, now it's an Atari 800 XL.
Right. Right. Awesome. All right. Is there anything else I should ask you?
Well, I'd like to ask you a few questions if
sure.
That's all right. I know, like I said, I my dad passed away before... You know, I was old enough to appreciate all these great works he's done and stuff. And mm-hmm. So, I mean, what were the magazines you said he was Antic and Analog?
Okay, so he wrote. Yeah, let me bring up my notes here. He wrote a lot for Antic.
Mm-hmm. So,
for the whole life of the magazine, starting with like volume 2 and ending like really close to when the magazine folded. He.
Mm-hmm.
And then he wrote for Start a little bit, and Start was the same company, but for the 16-bit computers, and he just did a couple for that one.
Right.
He did maybe only one article for Compute Magazine, that one that I know of for sure.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote a few for Analog, which is interesting because that was the big competitor to Antic, and normally you only wrote for one or the other.
Right.
And then ST-Log, which was the follow-on, the 16-bit follow-on to Antic. So in my like quick research today, that's what I found. He wrote for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 magazines.
Right.
There certainly may be others.
I do remember reading some article that he wrote about going to some convention with one of his colleagues, and they were off to find the big new hardware of the time, and remember his colleague went looking for the 16-bit stuff and he was after the 8-bit stuff. So I know he preferred the 8-bit hardware.
As do we. Podcast is only about the 8-bit stuff. So
yeah, since I spoke with you on Monday, I did start listening to the podcast, and I've got to say it's very entertaining. I did a lot of driving for work this week, and so I started listening to the podcast on Tuesday, and I listened to it through today. I've got through the first 12 episodes and halfway through 13.
Yikes.
Yeah, that's a lot of driving. I went from where I live up to Peoria, Illinois, Quincy, Illinois, and all around there, so that's a lot of driving.
Yeah.
But yeah, cool. So it's kind of opened up a floodgate of information, you know. So I haven't gotten a chance to go and look at the show page or anything, but I'm sure there's tons of good information there, and I haven't started listening to the Floppy Days podcast yet. I'll give a
Floppy Days is great, yeah, and there's two other Atari podcasts now. So when you finish with us, you can move on to the Player Missile and Inverse Atascii.
Okay,
so that'll keep you busy for a while. Those are all about Atari 8-bit computers, and
right.
there are no podcasts that I know of about the Atari 16-bit computers. So,
okay,
your dad was not alone in his love of 8-bit.
So on Antic, yeah. Was he like on the weekly payroll? Would he just gotten paid per article, or
he had to have just been a freelancer?
Okay,
he probably got paid per article, per page per article.
Okay,
yeah, and you know maybe. I've talked to other authors, and I don't remember the amount, but it might have been $75 a page.
Okay. And I remember one of your interviews talking to somebody like that. If they knew that at the time, they just would have added more lines of code to get.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking of. Yes. Yeah, it's like if I was smart, I would have documented my code better. And
yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, he was certainly a freelancer. He got an award. I don't know if you know this. It's in 1986, Antic magazine like had awards for best software and best company and best you know, this and that, and he got an award as the Antic Award for Outstanding Contributor because he had written so much stuff.
Okay.
It said
that does sound familiar.
Yeah, it said in 1985 Missouri programmer Matthew Radcliffe was really on a roll, publishing four major Antic programs on a remarkable variety of subjects. In March he delivered the powerful printing utility Custom Print. Following in August was Atari Toons, an ambitious animation program. In September was the innovative Revision C converter that debugged a long-standing problem for many users of Atari Basic Revision B. Then in December, BBS Crash Buster was a valuable safeguard for bulletin board sysops needing protection against destructive system crashers. So that Revision C converter was a big deal.
Okay.
I mean, that was maybe the most important thing he did, because there was the Revision B of Basic had a bug in it, and eventually your program, let's see, what was it? Every time you saved your program, it got bigger. It got 16 bytes bigger. Useless garbage was added to it. So if you were working on a program, you save it, come back next day, you know, add a little more, save it. It would get bigger and bigger and bigger. And eventually it would get so big that it couldn't be loaded up again. And then when that happened, you were screwed.
Mm.
So Atari, they figured out how to fix the problem. And I'm not sure whether I'd have to reread the article. I'm not sure whether Atari fixed the problem and then your dad, he figured out, I think what happens, Atari fixed the problem in Revision C of BASIC, and then your dad figured out how to convert B to C, so all the thousands of people who had the old BASIC could basically upgrade it without getting a new cartridge. I think that's what happened, so that was pretty darn useful.
Okay, that's pretty cool. Yeah, I do remember having I had found a business card of his that said freelance software writer on it, and it had a... Hmm. You know, Matt Rat on there, and his little rat logo he had, and my youngest daughter got a hold of it, ripped it in half.
Oh man!
Yeah.
So, I was about to say, can I have a scan of that? But never mind.
Yeah, I think I threw it away. There might be some more in the file cabinet. I need to find time to go to my mom's house and go digging in the garage. We've got, you know, two huge file cabinets in there with tons and tons and tons of files. I have no idea what's important, what's not. So I need to go through that, but. I've got the discs right here. I don't think any of it's anything he did. I mean, I've got Atari Disk Operating System, Atari DOS, Big Bird's Funhouse, Atari Writer, Low D, Mars, Mo, Color Book, Playtoon, Picture Printer, looks like some printer in Writer software. I've got a tablet, one of those touch tablets, those writing tablets.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of neat. I haven't gotten to use that yet.
That's fun, yeah.
And Lucasfilm Games Ball Blazer.
Is that one? Oh, that's a great game.
Okay.
Okay, you just need to get play that game.
Disk driver working.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I plugged the 1050 in, I kept getting error 130, which is drive not found, I think.
Okay, so my guess is, so the drive, this is just a random guess, okay? The drive has a dial on the back, a switch or a dial, depending on...
They're both in the left
the drive.
Position.
And yeah, you want to make sure it's drive one.
Yeah, they're whatever. I did that. I have the manual for the 1050. I checked in that, and they're both in position one.
Have you tried just the RANA drive?
Yes, yeah, same thing.
Hmm.
But those switches are really weird. There's like four switches on it.
Yeah.
But it's set to one, I think.
Well,
yeah, there's four switches. The first one's up, the other three are down. I don't have the manual for this one, so I don't know. But so what I in BASIC, is that where you would try to load the program from, or
Well, like the commercial games, like Ball Blazer. Mm-hmm. I mean, are these with labels on them, or are
these pirated? This one has a label. I think this is the only. Yeah, the games I have. If I have a game with a label written on it, I've got an additional two. So I think he was being a developer. He was against the piracy. So I've got a Big Bird's Funhouse official, and then I've got a Big Bird's Funhouse, a backup.
Backup. Yeah. All right, so let's assume you're using a legit version of a game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have the manual, you probably know this, but you want to turn on the drive first.
Right.
Insert the disk, you know, close the drive, mm-hmm. then turn on the computer. Now, since you have an XL, you want to turn off disable basic when you boot.
That's something I haven't done yet. So
So you do that, but you hold down the option key
mm-hmm.
when, and then it should see the drive and boot from the drive at that point.
Okay. Yeah, and I was trying to load DOS doing that. And yeah, I didn't try disabling basic yet, so.
Yeah,
I've only messed with it about 10 minutes after I got it, and I haven't had a chance to really sit down and tinker with it much. But so that's something I have to look forward to.
My gut is that you're doing something wrong because I doubt both drives are bad.
Right, that's what I was thinking too. I'm doing something wrong.
Yeah. So. Any other questions for me?
I'm sure I'll think of some more later, but. Right. I'll email you something. Yeah,
cool, great. And if you find anything in those file cabinets or business cards or anything programming related, I would like to know. And I would like to see it. And I'm sure that listeners would like to delve into the archives if there is anything.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find some time this weekend to do that and send it over to you.
Awesome. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
As a follow-up, in March, I emailed Charles, and I told him I was getting ready to publish this interview, and I asked if he got his Atari working. And he said, "No, I think all the discs are bad from sitting in basements and poor conditions. I replaced all the chips in my 800XL. It didn't fix the color issue, but I did get it to try to access the discs, but none of them worked except for one, Ball Blazer, but even that crashed after a few minutes. I tried every disc on both of my drives. Someone from the Atari Age forums was kind enough to send me one of their spare 800XLs. I got the same result with all the discs and both disk drives on that one. If I happen across any more info, I'll be sure to send it to you." If you enjoy these interviews and would like to contribute something, I encourage you instead to donate to one of our favorite organizations, the Internet Archive, at archive.org. The Internet Archive is a nonprofit digital library with the stated mission of universal access to all knowledge. They've done incredible things to preserve computer history, including hosting thousands of programs in an in-browser Atari emulator, creating the Wayback Machine, and offering full-page scans of countless Atari computer books and magazines. Make your tax-deductible contribution at archive.org/donate.